not woke. Make that clear. Awake, not woke.
Hello, initiates, and welcome to another episode of the Awake Not Woke podcast. My name is Sarah, and you are listening to episode 39. We are talking about Bohemian Grove. If you dabble in conspiracies, you probably have heard of this particular one because it is a classic. It is popular. We got good old Alex Jones documentary on this. There's a lot of information out there on this one, but it's a really interesting conversation. We give our perspectives on it, the spiritual implications, and we just cover a lot of interesting stuff in this episode. So I really hope you enjoy this one. But before we get onto the episode, make sure you give us a follow on Instagram at Awake Not Woke Podcast. We do have a Twitter. We're not super active on it, but that is at Awake Not Woke Pod if you feel like following us there. And check out our website, awakenotwokepodcast.com. We do have a contact page on that website. If you're not a social media person and you want to hit us up for whatever reason, send us an email from that website. We love to hear your comments, your questions, just to say hi. We love hearing from you guys. So hit us up, DM us on Instagram, whatever is best for you. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps boost the algorithm, shows our podcast to new people. And there is a lot of you that have not reviewed yet. So just do it. It takes like 2 minutes. Come on. It really helps us out. If you're listening on the regular, I would really appreciate that. And also, if you're listening on the regular, make sure you subscribe because episodes come out every Sunday at 4:44 a.m. Eastern Time. So get notified when those drop on Sundays so you don't miss any. And finally, if you are really enjoying this podcast and you find yourself getting some sort of value out of this podcast, please check out our Value for Value shop. We do not take advertisements. We never will. We're not going to take sponsors. This is a project where Chas, my co-host, and I want to be the most authentic and versions of ourselves as possible. So if you check out our Value for Value shop, you can help reimburse us for the value that you are receiving in a way that keeps our podcast as authentic as possible. So you can either donate or you can choose your own price for some cool merch, t-shirts, mugs, stuff like that. And it would be really appreciated if you check that out. You might even get a shout out on the show if you send a certain donation. So make sure you go check that out. And while you're on Etsy, check out my co-host Chas's Etsy shop, 5D Impressions on Etsy. She makes hand stamped jewelry, apparel, all kinds of cool stuff. Get a gift for your loved one from her because she would really appreciate that. And it's some cool stuff. So yeah, I think that is all that I need to remind you to do. So without further ado, let's get on to the episode. Episode 39 of Awake Not Woke podcast. We're talking about Bohemian Grove and with your host, myself, and Chas. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome back to Awake Not Woke podcast. This is Chas and Sarah.
Hello.
As always. And we have not hung out in a minute. And this is really fun to be back recording behind the mic and just hanging out and talking about lots of different things that we have been going through the last few weeks or so. But also today we're going to be talking about Bohemian Grove, which is really fun because kind of going back down the rabbit hole of a conspiracy sort of talk and haven't done that in a while either. So I think it's going to be really fun and interesting and weird as shit. But
yeah. Yeah. Bohemian Grove is one of these conspiracies that I'll consider kind of a classic conspiracy, at least in 2022. It's one of the ones that has been around for a while.
Very well known.
Yeah. It's very well known. And it's also very convincing, I would say. Like, we've got our good old Alex Jones's footage, and there is a relatively large amount of proof for this conspiracy. We're going to be talking a lot about the footage from Alex Jones. I'll put that in the show notes, like a BitChute link or something. But there is a whole like documentary that he made. But I'll at the very least just clip or link the Bohemian Grove cremation of care footage, because that one is,
that's what most people are familiar with.
Exactly. Yeah. But let's start with just the basics. So what is Bohemian Grove? It is a place. It is in the John Muir. I was going to look up how to say this and I didn't, but M-U-I-R, John Muir, Moyer, something, John Muir Woods in California. It's like a portion of these woods and it's kind of like a campground area, but it is named after the Bohemian Club, which is a gentleman's club that was founded in 1872 from a regular meeting of journalists, artists, musicians, and then eventually they started letting businessmen and entrepreneurs into the club.
Right.
So that's what it is, just basically. And that's, again, very provable. There's a fucking Wikipedia article like on all of this. And I just very, very easily pulled a lot of this information. Like, it's actually kind of incredible that more people don't already know about it.
Yeah.
Because it feels like something that is just very out there in the open.
Yeah. Well, it's under this guise of being like that play club for rich folks, more right. or less. But the more sinister or dark part of it is where you kind of get into that conspiracy realm. But yeah, if you don't know about Bohemian Grove, I mean, it's real easy just to, you can literally Google it and find a crap load of information on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's the club and then the actual place. And then the main like event, I guess, that most people are referencing when they talk about Bohemian Grove is this 2 week, I think 3 weekend long event they put on, the Bohemian Club puts on every year at Bohemian Grove, which from what our good old AJ, Alex Jones, found out is just kind of like a drinking club for rich people. Mm-hmm. And Chas and I were just talking about it before we came on mic. It's kind of like the Renaissance Festival.
Slash Harvard.
Yeah. Slash like a music festival.
Like, and like very Harvard-esque treehouse vibes, if you can kind of think of that. And Renfest was the thing that I instantly thought of when I saw the footage. So
yeah, no, definitely. So that's what it is. And then the 2 week long event they put on includes a ritual slash play called the Cremation of Care. And it's actually funny because I've seen like clips of this all the last few years, just when I dove into the conspiracy world.
Yeah.
I've seen these clips. But I had not actually watched it all the way through. And it's literally just a play. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like it's not everyone standing around in robes, like bowing down to an owl.
No.
Like, it's not like a Death Eaters from Harry Potter, which is what I was picturing.
Yeah.
It's literally a play.
I think that's what a lot of people think the Cremation of Care is. And the play itself, I mean, it's hard to see in the Alex Jones footage.
It was from 2000.
Yeah. On like a pager. Camera.
Pager.
I don't know.
Think pager said
I think they said it was like a hidden camera that was disguised as a pager.
Got it.
So it like,
so he's just
like
holding up his pager.
I don't freaking know. But basically from the distance, it appears that the actors, if you will, in the play are in cloaks and robes, and you know, they're standing in front of this 30-foot owl statue that they have there, and allegedly like I think what's supposed to represent the spirit of care.
Yeah.
Is wrapped up like a body. Like, it's very weird. There's a lot of like speeches and music and theatrics. That's fireworks.
It's very much a play. But the theory behind it goes that it is a ritual that allows these elite people to literally cremate and burn away all the cares they have.
Yep.
And it honestly makes a lot of sense. And in the play, there's a lot of symbolism and a lot of like poetic wording, and it's very ritual like in the play. There's like the whole like burning of, I think, the spirit of care, you're saying. I think they burn that. There's a point where like he's like, you'll never escape me, and like it's like high school play. It's what it reminds me of.
I did theater in high school, and when I was watching this, I think because I too had this expectation of it being almost like witch Wicca, like, yeah, where they're standing or around like a fire and
Golden Dawn or yeah, something like that.
Something really weird is what I was, and it was weird for
it was
sure.
Very weird.
But it was a play. And I think what is being represented in the play, you could definitely break apart, kind of go a lot deeper into and find those, like I was saying, more darker principles, I guess. But at face value, it's just a really weird old play with like a lot of history, and the ceremony of it, I think, is probably the most dark in my opinion, because when you just kind of break down burning your cares away, I think there's a lot of great things that can come of that, you know, letting loose, releasing things, but they're doing it so that way they can have no remorse about
doing fucked up evil shit.
Yeah. Or what Alex Jones thinks that they do there, and you know, the whole sacrificing babies and all of that.
And I do believe during this 2-3 week thing, they have a lot of plays and little events like this. So there's probably a lot more going on than just the cremation of care that would probably put more context into this. But cremation of care is the only thing that the public has seen because of good old AJ.
The infiltration.
Yeah, love him for that. But one thing I did notice about the cremation of care video is they are very careful with their words. They phrase things very specifically.
It's very which intentional.
Is, exactly. And they do intentionally say things that allow the audience to inevitably partake in the ritual. Like they say, they say something along the lines of like, Bohemians take part in this with us, which is like the Bohemian Club, the Bohemians. Right. So they it's a play, but it's like a most the most efficient ritual you could think of. Like all you got to do is sit there, and when we ask, do you want to be a part of it, you give us your intent and you're part of it. Which that's how spells work. I mean, that's like you want, if I want to do a spell for you, if you give me the permission to do that spell, then you will receive the energy. Like that is what we're talking about. And so they do say, like, invite the audience to take part. And they also, so one line that really jumped out at me is a very specific wording that they used. And I'm just going to read it real quick and then we can talk about it. One of the lines that jumped out was, cast your spell over these mortals. Touch their world blind eyes with carrion. Open their eyes to fancy. Follow the memories of yesterday and seal the gates of sorrow. It is a dream, and yet not all a dream. And I literally copied that word for word from what they said. And that sounds very much like the theories of the social engineers and what they are doing to us as the public. They are they're touching our eyes and blinding it to what's actually going on in the world, and then opening our eyes to fanciful, they will eat bread and give them bread in circuses and they will never revolt. Like that's what they're doing, is they are symbolically right now giving the Bohemians the permission to and the power to hypnotize the public into doing what they want.
Yeah. I think the other part of this that is very, I don't know if creepy is the right word, but if you're kind of going down that rabbit hole and you're in that realm, is we're talking about it very openly. This information's out there, but also part of this club is the secrecy of it.
So right, exactly.
One really weird thing that kind of to bring a little pop culture into it too is on the site, there's allegedly this structure of the patron saint. His name is John of Nepomuk. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but basically he's the saint of Bohemia, and he drowned because he refused to divulge secrets of, he was like the confessional of the queen, and he refused to divulge those secrets, and he was drowned for it. So his...
In what year was this?
Oh God, I didn't write down the year, but this is like old, like Saint, they're still referring to people as like Saint John and all of that of Bohemia. I could look it up to find the actual date, but
the I'm just curious because it was founded in 1872, the club.
This is just a sculpture that's in the club.
Got it. Okay.
So it's not like what the club was necessarily based on. I just, the symbol of the sculpture is really interesting to the secrecy of it.
For sure.
Because this saint was more or less murdered for not talking about something. And the sculpture there has Saint John with a finger over his lips, like, shh. And how many pictures of celebrities do we see with this finger over their lips. And I know you don't like to refer to them as the Illuminati, but
no, I know.
For the general public, the Illuminati, sure. that's kind of part of it. So it kind of brings it back into this social engineer idea of it's in plain sight, but it's also a secret because the dark occult or whatever.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it's interesting how long this has been going on. Another alleged fact about the Bohemian Grove is they're allegedly an offshoot of the Skull and Bone Society. And the Skull and Bone Society is a secret society that was in, I don't know if it's Yale or Harvard. I don't remember. I didn't do a lot of research on the Skull and Bones, but it's another one of these like deep secret societies that runs its roots like throughout our history without us even realizing it. It's just really interesting how all of these things connect and how when you begin to start picking apart the symbolism for one thing or another thing, all these things start to slowly connect together. Just like you said with the finger over the lips or the one eye thing. I think a lot of this is hinting at the secret that they understand God. They understand the world that we're in. The idea that this earthly realm that we're part of is just a stop on the larger existence that we are a part of.
Yeah.
And that it's not meant to be taken so seriously. It can be easily manipulated using manifestation or what we'll talk about in next week's episode, thoughts. We are able to... It's a playground. It's a video game. It's not something so serious. And not only do they know that and they know all of these concepts, but they are actively hiding it from the general public so that we cannot use those principles. And then they are applying those principles on us in evil ways that not only hides it from us, but suppresses it within us. Like, I mean, as far as even like chemtrails and fluoride and the hypnotism in our music, in our media, in the news, they are using every possible weapon they have against us to keep this information from us. And that's truly what I believe a lot of these, if not all of these secret societies, that's the main secret they're hiding from. And we talked a little about before we started this episode about the Bible and all the different translations of it. And that's why I think there are so many of these secret societies as well, because they all have the same information. And eventually I think they started realizing they all have the same information. They just phrase it a little differently, or they perform their rituals a little differently. And that's why you have all these like different offshoots. You have the Illuminati, you have the Skull and Bone Society, you have the Freemasons, you have the Bohemian Grove. They're all saying the exact, literally the exact same shit, except Bohemian Grove has an owl, Freemasons has like the 90 degrees. Like, it's all the same thing.
It's all just, all the symbols represent the same idea altogether. So speaking of this owl.
Yeah.
It's a 30-foot friggin' massive sculpture. I'm pretty sure it's 30 feet tall in general. And that's like their altar in this play as well. So this is where they're burning moss and all of that. But also when they're doing the cremation of care, this is where the what Alex Jones calls the human sacrifice would be happening. So this owl, we decided that they do refer to it as Molech.
I do believe so. Okay. I don't remember like hearing it myself, but I do know that has been referenced many times. I didn't watch the whole 30 minutes. I skipped through a lot of it.
So. I couldn't remember if the owl's name was Molech or if they were more or less worshiping Molech, like the deity or spirit or whatever that is. But
either way,
one thing that I kind of dove into, because lately, you probably, if you've listened to like the whole Jesus episodes that we've been doing, I've been very much kind of just
rediscovering
the Bible and honestly just kind of seeing its take on many different things. So I went ahead and looked up Molech in the Bible. So in the Old Testament, in Leviticus, there's Leviticus chapter 18. Basically, there's a lot of talk about commandments, you know, don't have sexual impurity, don't like sacrifice babies, like all of these things, which
good advice.
Yeah. But within that sacrificing babies, it talks about sacrificing the children to Molech. So when we kind of get into this conspiracy realm of the elites, and there's a whole lot of stuff about like baby eating and all of that, and I found that kind of strange in relation to the Bible because it's right there. So you're saying they know the Bible, they know God. So they're getting all of this from that same place.
Can I have a quick clarification? Yeah. Moloch, it's Moloch Baal, right? It's the same person or is that?
So Moloch specifically in the Bible didn't have mention of Baal into it. So I'm not really sure how that relates.
But you know what I'm talking about? How sometimes it's referred to as that full name Moloch Baal. I'm going to Google it real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to say it's a Moloch Baal is like the Hebrew Bible or the Jews have the full name, but I think it's the same thing.
So just a translation.
Yeah.
Something in the translation, either drop the ball in this.
No pun intended, but it was great. We both just start giggling.
I didn't even realize it until it came out.
And dropped just... the ball. That was so good.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, no, everything that I'm seeing on here is all, like, I searched Moloch ball, and it's spelt, like, several different ways, mm-hmm. with ball, without ball, or just referred to as ball, B-A-A-L. Okay. So, same thing.
So, okay, good. I just, yeah. No, I'm glad we had that clarity, because I honestly had no idea, and I didn't know how to answer that question. So Leviticus was the first reference that I found initially. Then we go into, this is kind of where it got a little weird for me. So we go into the book of Acts, which is in the New Testament. And in Acts chapter 7, there's this guy named Stephen. Not too much background info on him other than he's just a holy man that was proclaimed to do signs and wonders among the people. So basically, he was chosen to kind of look after, like, the women, distribute food after there was a dispute in the early church. But Stephen says in Acts, you have taken up the tabernacle of Molech and the star of your god, Rephan. I don't know how to pronounce that, so I'm just going to say Rephan, which is an idol, and says that basically they're going to be exiled, and they are the rebellious ancient Israelites in the Bible story. So I looked into Rephan. And Rephan is the Greek translation of an Old Testament Septuagint. I'm not sure how to say that either, but basically that's the translation. The LXX is the translation of the Hebrew Bible into Greek. So these words kind of come from that translation.
Got it.
So there are a lot of Bible versions that translate Rephan into other names. One that I found was the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia identifies Rephan as the Babylonian name for the god of the planet Saturn.
Mm,
yeah. Okay. So from what I don't know a whole lot about Saturn worship, but I know that that definitely ties in to all of this conspiracy realm, social engineers.
Yeah. Saturn is the planet of control. And it's that first planet too, with the Saturn returns when after you hit around 30, it returns into the sign that it was in when it was born. And it's a very serious planet. And the social engineers like to use the power of Saturn along with the power of Mars to create controlled destruction of these universal understandings. That's why we kind of have experienced like a dark age in the last however many years, decades, when the social engineers have been actively applying these principles, because they are actively cutting us off of this energy.
Which makes sense that they would worship Molech, and the fact that all of that is referenced in the Bible just goes to show that these principles aren't these new wild concepts. Like, they're deeply, deeply rooted in true spiritual practice, which should really kind of show the power of them. And when I read the Saturn thing, it just kind of blew my mind, because it was one of the first times that I really went deeper into the Bible in the conspiracy sort of mindset, yeah, I guess. Sure. So finding that was really, really interesting to me. And then when you bring it into all of this pop culture stuff, I mean, there's different celebrities that rep Saturn stuff with earrings and tattoos and all of these different things.
Oh, there's a lot of tattoos. It's really all of interesting.
So the fact that this is all tied into Bohemian Grove and the people that attend these rituals, ceremonies, whatever, are a lot of them, you know, rich elites, some just rich, like, people in general.
Yeah.
But the elite people, the social engineers, these are the more sinister things that I was kind of referencing in the beginning, talking about, yeah, it's a play, but they're 100% rooted in these kind of darker facts or ceremonies and spiritual mm-hmm. practices.
Yeah, and the symbolism just goes so deep. Like the Moloch that ate his children, a lot of symbolism you see like the owl, and the owl represents this like deeper wisdom and stuff like that. But if there's also a relation with Moloch and the owl, which I'm purely taking from the fact that they are either referencing this owl god as Moloch or something, right. There's some relation there. I also think of the god, the Greek god, Kronos, mm-hmm. which ate his children, which is the god of time. And we often see like clock symbolism around owls quite often. You know, I don't know why I like associate those two things, like the grandfather clock image, that archetype, and then yeah. like an owl that is wise and that like that gong of time coming. Like it's all very interrelated in many ways.
Yeah. I also looked into, which I never actually knew, that the owl was associated with death as well. Mm-hmm. I kind of went with that basic understanding of wisdom, knowledge, independent thinking, yeah. sees things that aren't there, hears things or that others can't see, hears things that others can't hear. But when it comes to the social engineer perspective, the death and new beginnings, I feel like is directly related to the Great Reset. So it makes total sense to me that this owl, if assuming that this is the grounds in which many of these social engineers partake with each other, whatever that may mean,
yeah.
it makes a lot of sense to me that that would be the symbol that they choose to represent their worship or devotion to.
Mm-hmm. And there's also some associations with like the Greek goddess Athena, and she was really well known for like wisdom and knowledge and this I can't read my own handwriting here, but
I thought I wrote something. Yeah.
I love it. But there's just so much interconnectedness. Like you could go down a string of rabbit holes going from one symbolism and the understanding, and it's all just so deeply interrelated. So it's really interesting to pick that apart in the context of Bohemian Grove. Another thing that the Bohemian Grove people say quite often is weaving spiders come not here.
Yeah.
And it sounds very much like a protection spell in my head. Like weaving, they explain it as weaving spiders as in those who are coming just to network and to meet people and to like weave their webs, so to speak, are not welcome there. And why would they not be welcome there? That is the question. My first thought was they probably aren't welcome there because they just want to have a good time. Like that's like the logical explanation of what they're saying there is like, we're not doing business. And there's even a few like instances I found in Wikipedia or articles somewhere saying like business is not like, you're not supposed to conduct business during that 2 week, but yeah. it oftentimes happens. But why would a bunch of business people be welcomed into a organization that does not want business to be done? Because in the 1800s, it was mostly just journalists, artists, musicians, and then they began to actively like invite businessmen and wealthy people to it. If they're inviting them and they're not allowed to do business, why are they there? Because they're powerful and they have access to larger scopes of audience. So why would they not want the weaving spiders there? Because they want all that energy to be contained in that one area, that time and place that they are conducting it in, so that they can go out and use that after. Does that make sense? Like mm-hmm. in my head, it makes sense, because if you had a weaving spider in there, then it's their intention isn't aligned with the intention of the group. So you want to keep it people who are already elite people. You don't want like Alex Jones walking around in there because he's clearly trying to make some connections and weave his web in there.
For sure.
And so that's what I think. But it's just another interesting symbolism. And now you have this like web symbolism and the connection symbolism and the internet web, the web on the internet. So we're woven into this web.
Yeah.
So why would they not want a web woven in their own environment? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How like all this symbolism just goes so deep.
Yeah. One thing you kept saying is why? And that's kind of like my overall thought just watching all of it. Just why are you all there? Why are you having this play? Why are you depicting a human sacrifice? I mean, whether or not there's actually a human in there, we won't know. Mm-mm. But why? Like what could you possibly be harnessing and need that amount of people there?
And specifically in an old growth redwood forest. I find that very interesting because there's not a lot of old growth forests anymore. Why would they get rid of all the old growth forests?
Okay.
And then specifically have this event in an old growth forest.
So I was also thinking about that because there was recently, in the last few years anyway, a bunch of fires in the redwoods, right? Where all of these trees were burned down. And I mean, I don't know if this was anywhere near that, but part of me went down that side of things, but also, you know, you hear about, we've talked about God smiting people and, you know, basically like burning shit up that isn't of God, isn't going to be for the people. So in a way, it's a natural disaster and very tragic. I mean, national forests and all of that burning down are terrible, but what if that was almost like in an effort to destruct these more sinister grounds in which they have clearly so deeply rooted these principles in?
Or what if, because old growth forests are specifically like super fucking old trees that are like hundreds, if not close to thousands of years old. So obviously you can't just grow an old growth forest tree. But what if these forests, since they're so old, they have such deeply connecting power where if you spend time in an old growth forest, you can feel God, you can feel more connected. And if we had access to more of these types of forests, there'd be more people waking up. There's only one old growth forest in Michigan, and I've been to it. We didn't even walk through it very long, but you can feel just like how deeply connected. Because not only is it there's an old forest, and forests in general are just like, you're connected to nature, all that great stuff. But like literally the roots probably go down so fucking deep and the branches go so high up. This is like such a pure representation of as above, so below. And the energy conduction, like when you're in there, like if you went and meditated in old growth forest, or like just any, like just sat and thought about your life and tried to do manifestation or like anything in an old growth forest, I feel like it's gonna work a little better. Like your brain is gonna work a little better.
Yeah. And there's like you were saying, energetic properties and currents that flow through these places. That's kind of where I think the druid side comes into all of this, which
absolutely.
I don't have a whole lot of
pagan.
Yeah. And I don't have a whole lot of info on that, but in watching the play, there were several remarks about the trees and the spirit of nature and the mother nature and all of that. So there's definitely something to that, no doubt. I mean, it was a very intentional placement to conduct these ceremonies and these rituals. Mm-hmm. And it goes without saying that it's because of those energetic properties that exist within these old growths. I mean, those roots are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old. And it kind of also reminds me of that interconnected web, the weaving mm-hmm. spiders, because if the roots are all connecting together and trees can communicate through that, I think.
Yeah, they're the mycelium, yeah.
So that's like a spell to almost sever that connection mm-hmm. and that communication outside of the place that they're doing that.
Yeah, it's crazy. And to kind of jump back for a second to that line that jumped out at me, one of the specific things that jumped out at me, because we talked again about how in the cremation of care, they're very specific about the words that they use and very intentional mm-hmm. about how they are phrasing things. And one thing that I thought was particularly interesting was in that line that I read earlier, it said, touch their world-blind eyes with carrion. And I didn't know what the word carrion meant, so I Googled it. And the definition, and this is specifically what it said on Wikipedia for the definition of carrion, is decaying flesh of animals, including human flesh.
Ugh.
So, and it said specifically, including human flesh. And there's like a video game or like a horror game called Carrion, and like, it's a very gory word is what I came to understand.
Yeah.
It's not just like compost or like gross. It's not just something like, ew, like that's gross. It's like decaying, war-torn flesh, like the most disgusting death word you can think of is the word carrion. So I thought it was interesting that they used it. And then the Wikipedia page goes on to talk about, like, you know how there's like a million definitions mm-hmm. and it'll go like real deep in on Wikipedia. It went on to talk about how animals, including carnivores, use carrion as a food source. And I just thought that was really strange that they would use that specific word to touch their world blind eyes with carrion, with decaying flesh and evil. Like,
ugh.
Literally, this is the vibe that it gives me is like what I would imagine hell is like full of carrion. So I just thought that was really interesting that they used that specific word, because it could have been a million things. Touch their world blind eyes with evil. Touch their world blind eyes with
death.
Or like, what's the lazy, the sin that's laziness?
Oh my God. Gluttony?
Gluttony. Yeah, touch their world blind eyes with gluttony. Like, there could have been a million like less intense words you could use for this, but this is what they're going for. So it's not just like a little bit of evil. It's like decaying flesh, hell, torn evil.
It's dark. It is. It's very, very dark. And I think that they're so intentional about the words that they use for a reason. And I think that if you're maybe a patron of these, you know, weekends or whatever, unless you're a part of that deep spiritual side of all of it, I mean, you probably would never know, which makes you subject to things of the supernatural that you might not even be aware of. So, I mean, these people might even be leaving these conferences or these ceremonies. Shit might be popping off in their life and they have no idea why. And it's because they literally gave permission to have friggin' carrion stuff.
Like, they might actually be just possessed or
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, they'll just go back home after these things and know no different. And I mean, obviously there's people there that definitely do know what's going on, because why else would it be going on for what, like 120 plus years or some shit? I mean, the ceremonies have been going on for a really long, long time.
Yeah. And you know what, this, I didn't even take any notes of this, but now that we're talking about it, this kind of gets interwoven with reptilians also.
Oh, for sure. I actually saw something about that.
Because like with all this evil shit and this carrion and this, like, truly evil shit we're talking about, Moloch, Baal, like, that type of evil. It's not humans Mm-mm. that are doing this. Like, me and you humans. And it is human bodies, but it is human bodies filled with carrion. And why would this in this body be rotting? Because it's not a human that's inside that body anymore. You need soul, spirit, to keep you alive. Like, we can hook you up to machines and stuff these days, but that's not truly alive. Mm-mm. So to be alive and not just rotting away on the inside, you have to have a soul. And so if you don't have a soul anymore, and we see it with all this fucking like adrenochrome shit and like all the celebrities just like they start rotting away and like literally looking like just human corpses at some point, and they live for like way fucking too long, like the all the Rothschilds and stuff that are like 108 years old and they look like they're just like falling apart.
You're frail.
Yeah. So what if they're just fucking reptilians, like actual non-human things?
It's some supernatural shit, like without a doubt. And I don't say supernatural in a religious sense. I mean it quite literally. It's, I think that reptilian sort of idea is a supernatural phenomena, because it's using the host, and in the host is the home of these supernatural, whether you want to call them demons or aliens, parasites or aliens. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the concept of spiritual warfare for me rings more true and true every single day, because we don't fight against flesh and blood. Like it's not about the meat suits. It's about everything else that is that the meat suit holds.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's where I think conversations like this, where on the surface, Bohemian Grove is this weird little Renaissance festival for rich people. And I think that's what it actually is.
Yeah.
But deeper than that, there is very sinister things going on. And we've already said that like 17 times. But the reason we keep repeating this specific note is because the layers that you have to go through to actually understand what is going on with the spiritual warfare are very tedious. Like, yes, on the surface, it is this one thing. And then if you go a little deeper, okay, that's a little creepy. There's symbolism here, there, and there. And they probably understand these spiritual principles. They're trying to keep it from us. Okay, great. But if you keep going deeper, you can really, truly see how deep the evil goes. And if we understand the world to be this world created by God, to have this balance, to this duality, it is all God, but God created this beautiful, bright light. So there kind of has to be an equal darkness to match that.
Yeah, where there's good, there's evil, and where there's evil, there's good. I think that's a fundamental law of what we exist in.
Yeah, but to understand that at this level is just kind of terrifying, because can have that in your personal journey and like really see like, oh, I was really depressed and now I'm really not depressed. And then when I'm somewhere in the middle, like it's this beautiful place to be and blah, blah, blah. Like this duality within your own life is a very beautiful thing. And you can learn to really love that. And if you are just like an average person, you're never going to reach that true, true evil, and you're never going to reach that true, true goodness. And that's the whole point. But outside of you, in this earthly realm that we exist in, we have the full scale. And most people are going to lie somewhere in the middle, regardless if like they're leaning one way or another and in their own personal hero's journey. But when you start looking at the whole scale and start realizing that this is an infinite scale, there is infinite good and there is infinite evil, you gotta understand how infinite that is. Like, you have to really make yourself aware of how evil this evil is and how good this good is. Like, mm-hmm. The awareness of it, I can't stress enough.
I agree. And for me, I think the whole, which I know, I don't think we've done an episode specifically on spiritual warfare yet, but we've talked about it.
List.
I think that is something that has opened up my awareness to that sense of true evil, because, you know, God, we are gods. Ye are gods. You know, God exists in us. It fills us. It's all of that. And what we fight against is of that supernatural nature. But it's the other side of it. Mm-hmm. So spiritual warfare really helped me understand that and have a much deeper awareness. And you're right. It is freaking terrifying, because if you have this moment of understanding and grasping the love of God or the light or whatever you want to call it, when you come to the knowing that directly on the other side of that, or the other side, whatever, is that deep sense, that darkness, that some people use the word demonic sort of force to it. Yeah, I mean, it is scary. But the good thing about all of this is because we have that higher knowledge, that truth, our eyes on God, we don't have to be afraid of that stuff.
No, absolutely. And to use a Star Wars example, which you still won't understand because you still haven't watched it, but it's okay. I always like to think of, like, for this evil, just why we're talking about it, the feeling that I get when I do research into this, like, Bohemian Grove and these types of secret societies and type stuff, the feeling I get is similar to the scene in the last trilogy, the newer one with Rey, where she is on the island with Luke and he is trying to teach her the ways of the Force, and she is immediately pulled to the dark side. And spoiler alert, the reason this happens is because she is the, I think the daughter of like Emperor Palpatine, like the worst Sith, like the worst dude in the show. I think that's who she's the daughter of, like this really evil dude. But so she is naturally pulled toward this dark side. And there's a scene where her mind is pulled into this like depth of a cave of darkness. And there's nothing particularly gruesome about this cave, but the way they shot this scene, the way she was just pulled in and like sucked into this evil, was very powerful. And that's how learning about this stuff can feel, like that you're being sucked towards it. Mm. But as long as you are aware that this evil exists, you have to be aware, but you are within the graces of God. You are not going to fall, to succumb to that when you are truly on your hero's journey. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like, I think when like Christians get really hardcore into like, I'm never going to listen to this music. Like, right. I'm never going to watch this TV. It's kind of like you have to learn about it. But if you really trusted in God, you'd be able to walk right through it without any worries. So there's a lot to that as well. One more thing I wanted to talk about, just like about Bohemian Grove and some of the weirdness of it, is I found this map of the camp from 1952. So like their 2-week camp they've been doing for literally ever. There's this big map, and I'm actually going to pull it up real quick because I wanted to look at it while I'm talking about it. But it was a map of the event that they were having, like that we've talked about several times. It's this weird like cartoon map. It's a giant map of the whole, kind of like a like an amusement park map or something. Like if you went to Disney World, it kind of looks like that map with all these little cartoons and like these locations with these silly names. But it just feels a lot more sinister because like, you know, this is, what the hell was that?
I don't know, dude.
That was weird. I just set my thing here.
Did anything fall?
I don't think so. That is so weird. I set my notebook and then something fell, so there's that. Anyway, this cartoon map that, again, like I was saying, seems sinister when the demon in the house let us know that we're on the right track, so must be onto something. But it shows like this little store and then all these locations called like the Land of Happiness, Green Lantern, Nazdar. Is that a,
I don't know,
a Bible thing? No,
I can look it up.
Nazdar, Nazdar. And then there's one just says cool. One is like normal, like the auditorium, the grill. But then there's these camps, and like there's camps called Seven Trees, Hillbillies. Oh, see, I told you there's a literally a place called the Hillbillies. You said Alex Jones was like, we're with the Hillbillies.
Yeah, when he was questioned by one of the security guards or something.
Yeah, one of the camps is called the Hillbillies. So he did his research. There's a camp area called the Crow's Nest. There's a camp area called Uplifters. And I think they just described it as like quirky names for the different camp areas. Like nothing too weird. There's like one called Wild Oats, and there's this weird drawing of like a creepy wheat man, like it's like a stalk of wheat that has a face on it and arms. And then there's a dining circle, like normal stuff, but there's all these weird little drawings on it. I'll put this in the show notes as well. Let me know if you the listener are looking at this and you catch anything that I didn't, because there's just a lot of details in it. And I'd be interested to see if anything jumps out at you, because there's just a lot of really interesting stuff. And it is a big map. Like, I'm still scrolling through it as I'm talking here. Snug Harbor, Star and Garter, Yee County Gale.
Weird. So I didn't find anything with Nazdar in relation to the Bible, just in the quick little bit that I was doing. But Nazdar meaning is to the success, less widely used than the first Czech greetings. Nazdar is yet another way to say hi, literally meaning to the success.
Great.
And it dates back to the mid-19th century. Also, I did look up that saint that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. Mostly, I just brought him up to show the symbolism of the secrecy, but it was back in like the 1300s that it happened. Mm. So like a long-ass time ago.
So even though this was created in late 1800s,
it's a representation of the secrecy of not divulging the information, which makes sense. I mean, if these are rich elite people that essentially want to let loose at this thing, they don't want to take this shit back home. You know what I mean?
No, so, for sure. And this kind of reminds me of the whole like Janet Ossenborough Follow the Cabal. Oh, like how she, I think the second part, I never finished the second part,
but
she started like specifically linking the whole history timeline of how we got to where we are.
Yeah.
And she starts with like sons of people from the Bible and like literally goes down a lineage line and like explains how all these families slowly converge to create the Illuminati and how like the Illuminati was they were part of some culture and then they had to convert to Judaism. Like they had to choose a religion. So they just pretended to be Jews. And that's why you have all the like, I don't know, like, what's the kind of Jew that I'm thinking of that Sam Tripoli always talks about?
Hasidic?
No.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's why, like, all this comes, all these things connect together in the conspiracy realm.
I didn't realize, I don't know too much about the Czech Republic or anything in relation to that, but going back to that St. John that I
Jesuits. Yeah.
Got it. The St. John, so he was the saint of Bohemia, and then in parentheses it says Czech Republic. And that Nazdar thing was also a Czech way, Czech meaning to say hello or to the success. So now I'm kind of just wondering, like, the roots in Czech and how that all...
I bet Janet Osmborough already has on there.
Yeah, she probably does.
I couldn't. My ADHD brain was having a hard time following, but it's all, like, literally laid out and, like, what countries they were in. And it was all, a lot of, like, Middle Eastern stuff that eventually came over with the Europeans.
Insane,
and,
dude.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
It's insane, too, that all this information, like, exists out there in bits and pieces that we can somehow piece together. Like, I think about that all the time, about how if we're just sitting here, me and you, there's literally no way we can know about history except through the words of people who lived it. So out there somewhere, there's people collecting all these journals of historical, just regular old people, and piecing together what happened.
Yeah.
And through that information, those records, we somehow can figure out vaguely what happens, but we'll never know for certain.
Mm-mm.
So it's just really interesting that enough of this information even exists out there for a, I mean, let alone Janet Osmborough, but, like, even a history book to exist. Like, we're literally just trusting these records. So there's no reason that we shouldn't be questioning all of this, because we don't know who wrote it. Like, you should be doing your own research and taking into consideration what these random other people are saying, because that's all we're piecing together history with anyway, is just all this random bits of information.
And that's why the spirit of discernment is so, so important in all of this as well, because doing independent research is very important, and different interpretations of it are valid. I mean, the way that even the differences between the lens that you see things and I see things, I mean, it's getting to the same place, but the way that we describe it is different at times. So I think having that spirit to discern what is the truth and what's rooted in God and rooted in those things is so important when you're doing your own research, because like you said, we don't know who the fuck wrote anything, and there's a lot of different stuff out there.
Right. And when you really get comfortable on your own hero's journey, I think it gets easier and easier to discern what is right and what is not, because you just feel it. Like, that truth is within you. Truth is always within you. God is truth with a capital fucking T. So when you start to really focus on that and focus on God and focus on yourself and your journey, you start to feel what is right and what is wrong. And I say that right and wrong, like true and untrue, it's all relative anyway to your own personal perspective. But the more you neutralize and detach yourself from the ego and the attachment to this earthly realm, the more you get closer to this objective truth rather than the subjective perspective of everything around you. One more final thing I have about Bohemian Grove specifically is I was curious, who is part of this group? Like, who do we know is in the Bohemian Grove? And there's not a lot of information that I was able to find easily with modern day members, but I did find a list of some people who were included or in the past were included. First off, they always offer membership to people like university presidents, like Yale and Harvard and all these notorious universities. They just offer the president's admission, which I think is kind of interesting, because, like, you got to get in the minds of the up and coming generation to keep it going.
Right.
So you got to make sure you have the university presidents on board. But a few people that I listed, it was a lot of people. I had no fucking clue who these people were. And I was clicking on, like, Wikipedia article after Wikipedia article on these random ass people. And it was all just, like, businessmen. This guy invented this specific little thing. This guy invented this specific little thing. This guy started this random little business. And there's all these, like, entrepreneurs and I'm sure they were important, but I didn't know who they were. But a few I did know, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wow.
So that was interesting. Herbert Hoover, who was the president. Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. And then Henry Kissinger was like a politician in the early 1900s or some shit. So,
and I know Alex Jones claimed that the Bushes were also a part of it.
The Bushes were definitely part of the Skull and Bones Society. And this is allegedly an offshoot of the Skull and Bones Society. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
But I don't think I found anywhere where they like admitted to it or their name was anywhere. Because I think this list was only like names they could prove. Like there was then signed something somewhere, guestbook or something like that. But the Bush thing, everything, every time Bush came up, it was when he said, like, they asked him about the Skull and Bone Society in an interview in like early 2000s or something. And he was like, well, it's so secret, I can't talk about it. So he kind of admitted that he was in the Skull and Bone Society, but didn't talk about it. And I want to say both Bushes, like Junior and Senior, have made comments like that.
I think at the end of the Alex Jones documentary, he like stands on the street with a megaphone and starts talking, yelling about Bush. And he has this person with him wearing a Bush mask and he's wearing a cloak. And I think the sign just says like Bohemian Grove or something like that. And he's just yelling about, this is how Bush dresses at Bohemian Grove, like just being Alex Jones.
I love Alex Jones on the street. Alex Jones. I would love to run into Alex Jones on the street. I don't think he does that much anymore. Too bad I was very young in the 80s.
He would just start yelling.
It's just like the Joe Rogan episode with him in it. And he's like trying to get Eddie Bravo to choke him out for some reason. Have you seen that one?
I've seen clips of it. I haven't seen the whole thing, though.
It's very good. Do you have anything else that we didn't touch on with the Bohemian Grove stuff?
No.
No? Well, I don't either. If the listener has any information they would like to feed to us about Bohemian Grove, send it our way. And...
oh, okay. So the demon was not a demon. It was just Sarah's phone
dropping.
It was
just my phone. I just realized it was on the floor.
See what happens when you trust God.
Thanks, God. Love you. Before we leave, we did have a donator recently to our value for value modeled Etsy shop, where if you find yourself receiving any value from this podcast, you can donate to us and you might get a little shout out if you donate enough. So... M. Andrew Jones, Viscount of America's Mountain, gave us a donation. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
In the morning to him and in the morning to any of the No Agenda listeners who found their way to our podcast from the shout out they gave us a while ago. But yeah, if you want to donate as well and get a note or a shout out on the podcast, check out the link in the show notes to our Etsy, and we'll thank you on our next episode that we record. So yeah, there's that. And if you don't have anything else to add, I think we're done.
All right,
goodbye.
Bye. Back down the rabbit hole of